Okay, we're going back to the UN General Assembly General Debate Tuesday in New York. We heard last from South Africa, which is the S in BRICS. Now we're going to go to the B in BRICS, Brazil, and Brazil's President Michel Temer.
Madam President of this General Assembly, Maria Espinosa, Secretary General of the United Nations Organization, Antonio Guterres, ladies and gentlemen, heads of state and heads of delegation, ladies and gentlemen at large. It gives Brazil great pleasure, and it is an honor for us to officially open this general debate session. It is my pleasure to greet the chairperson of the General Assembly, Madam President Maria Espinosa, the very first Latin American woman to perform this high-ranking function at the United Nations. May I reiterate to you, Madam, my very best wishes for a most successful job, and be certain to count on Brazil. Greetings likewise to Secretary General Antonio Guterres. I am particularly pleased to greet you, Secretary, in our common language. Ladies and gentlemen, how many speakers have thus far come up to this podium to call for and advocate improvements to the international order that we have built throughout the decades? There have certainly been many such speakers, myself included. And I believe we were right, and we still are right. And I also believe that the words we uttered remain current and very much up to date. However, if we really want to improve our international and collective order, yet another task is required today, i.e., the task of advocating the very integrity of the order. An order which, however imperfect it may be, has nevertheless served to foster humankind's overarching causes. The challenges to the integrity of the current international order are many. We live in times clouded by isolationist forces. Old forms of intolerance are being rekindled. Unilateral relapses are today increasingly less of an exception. However, these challenges should not and cannot possibly intimidate us. Isolationism, intolerance, unilateralism. We must respond to each of these different trends with the very best of our peoples. Brazil has responded to the first of these trends, isolationism, with more openness, more integration. Brazil is keenly aware that our shared development ultimately depends on more international trade and investment flows. It depends on more contact with new ideas, new technologies. It is precisely by remaining opening to others that we will build a truly shared prosperity, and not by turning inwardly or to isolation. And this is how Brazil has acted. We have carried out a universalist foreign policy. In our geographical region, we have worked to deepen integration mechanisms. In the Mercosur bloc of countries, for example, we have underscored the bloc's democratic calling. We have knocked down trade barriers and entered into new agreements. We have also drawn closer ties with countries of the Pacific Alliance, thereby fostering an increasingly united Latin America, as is enshrined in the Brazilian Federal Constitution. We have either strengthened or started trade talks and negotiations with partners from all regions. The European Union, the European Free Trade Association, Canada, South Korea, Singapore, Lebanon, Morocco, Tunisia. Through these and other initiatives, we have increasingly drawn closer and closer ties with the Americas at large, as well as Europe, Asia, and Africa. Brazil's participation in cooperation fora, such as G20, BRICS, the Portuguese-speaking community of countries, has been particularly productive and fruitful. These are fora where we have worked to produce tangible results that have a direct impact on the everyday life of our societies. And this is how, through openness and integration, we have moved closer to a better future for all. Isolation may even give one a false sense of security at first. Protectionism may even sound seductive, but it is through openness and integration that we can actually achieve harmony, growth, and progress for all. Ladies and gentlemen, Brazil has also responded in a resolute manner to the challenge of intolerance by means of dialogue and solidarity. Dialogue and solidarity are the values that inspire us to repeatedly honor the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This document will soon, as has been said before, will soon celebrate 7 decades, and making it a reality remains an imperative that requires permanent attention and efforts. In the name of human rights, much has already been done by governments, institutions, and individuals of the stature of Brazilian national Sérgio Vieira de Mello, whose memory I wish to honor, as 2018 marks the 15 years of his tragic death. One must nevertheless recognize and admit that violations of international norms still can be found in several different places. The international norms that protect individuals and human integrity. In Latin America, Brazil has worked to preserve democracy and human rights. Working together with so many other countries, we will continue to stand side by side with our brotherly peoples who have suffered so much. Dialogue and solidarity are also at the very origin of the Global Compact for Migration, whose negotiations we have just completed. There are currently more than 250 million migrants all over the world. These are men, women, children who have been threatened by a lingering crisis and are ultimately led to make the difficult and risky decision to leave their homelands. It is our duty to protect them, and this is the purpose of the Global Compact for Migration. It is now our task to complete the ongoing negotiations of the Global Pact on Refugees. In South America, in particular, as you know, we are currently experiencing a large-scale migration wave. It is estimated that more than 1 million Venezuelan nationals have thus far left their country of origin in search of better and more decent living conditions. Brazil has welcomed all migrants who have arrived in our territory. We're talking about tens of thousands of Venezuelan nationals to whom we have sought to provide all assistance. In collaboration with the United Nations High Commissioner's Office for Refugees, we have built shelters to accommodate them as best possible. We have also, ladies and gentlemen, arranged for them to be taken to other regions of Brazil. We have also issued formal documents that enable them to actually work in Brazil. We have also offered schooling opportunities for children, plus vaccination and health care to all of them. But we know that the solution to the migration crisis will be forthcoming when our neighboring country, Venezuela, again finds the path to development. In Brazil, we are proud of our tradition of hospitality. We are, after all, a country that was made out of diversity. There's actually a piece of the world in every Brazilian national. Faithful and in line with this tradition, last year we enacted a new migration law, a modern, up-to-date piece of legislation that not only protects migration or migrants' dignity, but also recognizes the benefits of migration. We have also expanded rights and we have streamlined requirements to enter and stay in Brazil as a migrant. And since dialogue and solidarity are antidotes that help us fight intolerance and bigotry, they are also the very cornerstone of long-lasting peace. In view of the different crises facing the Middle East, this has been the cornerstone of the Brazilian position. This year, we joined the ongoing celebrations of Israel's 70th anniversary, and Brazil renews its support to the two-state solution, Israel and Palestine, living side by side in peace and in security. We have further supported international efforts to put an end to the ongoing conflict in Syria, a conflict that has been going on for too much time. We have sought to help mitigate so much suffering. In 2017 alone, to give you one example, Brazil donated nearly 1 ton of medicines and vaccines to assist the children affected by the conflict in Syria. We have also welcomed and accommodated a substantial number of refugees from Syria. In the Korean Peninsula, as mentioned earlier, a sense of dialogue and solidarity have also informed our position. We reiterate our support to diplomatic solutions that will promote denuclearization and peace. And as I said before, it is through dialogue and solidarity that we will overcome intolerance and build peace. Nelson Mandela, whose centenary we celebrate this year, said that it is our duty to strive towards a world of tolerance and respect for difference, and work towards an unswerving, unwavering commitment to peaceful solutions to conflicts and disputes. Lastly, we have before us the challenge of unilateralism. We have responded to that challenge by means of more diplomacy, more multilateralism. And we have done so with the strong conviction that collective problems require collectively coordinated responses. Hence, the overarching meaning and purpose of the United Nations as an organization. After all, this is by definition, and first and foremost, the house for mutual understanding. We must strengthen this organization. We must make it increasingly legitimate and effective. And that is why we also need important reforms to be carried out, including that of the Security Council, which, as it is today in its current configuration, reflects a world that no longer exists. In sum, we must also reinvigorate the values of democracy and of the multilateral system. We have repeatedly proved that together we are able of doing a great deal when these values guide our actions. This is how we have taken a historical step last year by completing the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. I myself had the honor of being the very first head of state to sign that treaty. And that is how, in the course of decades, we have built a multilateral system of trade, a robust multilateral system of trade with increasingly comprehensive rules and endowed with a credible and effective dispute settlement mechanism. These are historical achievements that all of us have achieved or accomplished and which we should all honor and broaden. By eliminating so many distortions to agricultural trade which have affected above all developing countries. And it is not only in matters involving disarmament and nuclear non-proliferation or international trade that diplomacy and the multilateral system can provide us with actual solutions. It is also true and applies to so many other fields of human activity, such as, for instance, sustainable development, which is really critical for the future of humankind. Only in the past few years have we negotiated the 2030 Development Agenda and the Paris Agreement. These are absolutely key milestones that do position us properly in the path towards economic growth coupled with social justice and respect for the environment. Brazil's priority and special commitment to sustainable development remains unmistakable. Examples abound. We are fully engaged in the ongoing movement towards an international low-carbon economy. More than 40% of Brazil's energy mix is clean and renewable. Actually, it is one of the most sustainable in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, our efforts to reduce deforestation have also been stepped up. The long-term trend is very encouraging. Today, in the Brazilian Amazon region, the deforestation rate is 75% lower than what it was back in 2004. We have established and expanded in Brazil in the past 2.5 years, ladies and gentlemen, several different environmental conservation units, which currently account for more than 4 times, for instance, the size of Norway or of the Norwegian territory. Oceans are also a very dear cause to us. During the recent World Water Forum that we held in Brasilia earlier this year, we formally established preservation areas in Brazilian seas as vast as the territories of Germany and France together. In 2 years, we have doubled the total size of preservation areas in Brazil. Diplomacy and the multilateral system are likewise key tools for global security, as clearly shown, by the way, in the United Nations peacekeeping missions, missions in which Brazil is proud to perform a high-profile role. And let us make no mistake, they are also key tools that help us overcome terrorism and tackle transnational crime. Trafficking in persons, arms trafficking, drug trafficking, money laundering, sexual exploitation are all criminal offenses that know no borders. They're scourges that erode the fabric of our societies and that can only be effectively tackled through concerted policies and actions. And that is precisely what we have done in our region. In Brasilia recently, a first ministerial meeting of the Southern Cone was held on border security. Since then, we have stepped up cooperation efforts with our neighboring countries to tackle transnational crime. Ladies and gentlemen, we must remain strongly united around this collective effort to build a world where peace, development, and human rights will prevail. We will not at all succeed alone. We will not at all do without diplomacy or without the multilateral system. Ladies and gentlemen, Madam President, Secretary General, this is, as a matter of fact, the very last time that in my capacity as President of the Republic, I have the privilege of representing my country in this general debate session. In 2 weeks, the Brazilian people will cast their votes as part of the upcoming elections, and they will choose the political leaders who, both at the executive and the legislative branches of power, will lead Brazil as of January 2019. And this is enshrined in the Brazilian Constitution, and this is what it has been like for nearly 30 years, and this is the way it should always be. After all, we are government officials that were established by the people, since every power stems from the people. And of course, the president is only the holder of power for a given period of time. And alternation in power is the very essence of democracy. And for us, ladies and gentlemen, we very much cherish our democracy and view it as a vibrant democracy anchored on solid institutions. I will hand over the presidency to my successor with the peace of mind of having fulfilled my duty. In Brazil today, we can look back in hindsight and see just how much we have managed to do in so little time in my administration. We have rejected and said no to populism and overcome the worst recession in our history, a recession with severe consequences to society, especially to the poorest. Or the poor in society. We have also repositioned government accounts in a responsible trajectory and restored economic credibility. We are growing again and creating jobs again. Social programs that were previously threatened by lack of proper controls in government spending were preserved and are now being expanded. We have therefore put Brazil back on the development track. The country I will hand over to whomever the Brazilian people elects is a better country than the one I received upon taking office. Much has yet to be done, true, but we have regained a clear sense of direction. The task at hand now consists in moving forward. The incoming administration and the incoming Congress will find consistent foundations on which they will be able to keep on building a more prosperous and more fair country. Ladies and gentlemen, all members of this General Assembly know all too well that they have and will always have in Brazil a firm ally for cooperation among nations, a country that, in view of isolationism, proposes more openness and more integration. A country that, in view of intolerance or bigotry, proposes more dialogue, more solidarity. A country that, in view of unilateralism, proposes more diplomacy and more multilateralism. In the words of our dear and late Kofi Annan, our mission is to confront ignorance with knowledge, bigotry with tolerance, and isolation with the outstretched hand of generosity. Thank you very much.
Brazil is one of Latin America's large economies, where what was in essence a legal coup d'etat removed President Dilma Rousseff and returned Brazil into the U.S. imperial orbit. There will be a presidential election this year, complicated by the fact that the leftist candidate, who also happens to be the most popular political figure in Brazil, has been disqualified after being prosecuted by the coup government. Argentina is the other largest economy in South America, and in 2015, its leftist government was turned out by a razor-thin margin in favor of Mauricio Macri, who we're going to hear from now.
Señor Secretario.
Secretary General, President, Your Excellencies, Delegates, I should like to congratulate the President for her election at the helm of our debates. I am sure that her work will attest to the relevance of women's leadership. It is an honour to return to this Assembly to share with you a vision of the situation in Argentina and to ratify our commitment to an Argentina which is a protagonist and which is integrated into the world. Our country is going through a period of deep change. We are determined to do this with humility, by accepting the difficulties and with a commitment to expending the necessary effort. I know that the efforts are great, and I should like to thank each and every Argentinian for this. We knew it would not be easy, because we are changing without taking shortcuts and without compromising the future. We are building consensus for equitable and sustainable development. 2 years ago, I shared here for the first time my view of Argentina as a trustworthy partner of the international community and a mediator in good faith in regional and international politics. I should like to renew this vision here today. Since I became president, we have promoted intelligent integration into the rest of the world based upon the value of our region, Latin America and the Caribbean. We are a zone of peace with young populations who are full of talent and vitality, with abundant resources and natural reserves. We are working towards greater integration between ourselves and, as a whole, with the rest of the world. This is evident in the willingness for dialogue and cooperation between the Mercosur and Pacific Alliance countries. We are seeking to make a positive impact on the 21st century world order. From the south, we have an optimistic standpoint which takes account of the opportunities and challenges of globalization. Intelligent integration is also our contribution in order to build a stable, inclusive, global region and order which uphold our values. those of peace, democracy, and human rights. I would therefore like to take a moment to express once again our concern with regard to the human rights situation in Venezuela. Given the seriousness of this situation, Argentina will refer to the International Criminal Court the situation with regard to crimes against humanity committed by the Venezuelan dictatorship. I call upon Venezuela to acknowledge the humanitarian crisis and thus allow for the deployment of international cooperation in order to provide the sorely lacking healthcare and food needs for the displaced persons. We are part of a regional and broad response which is seeking to mitigate the difficulties faced by millions of Venezuelans after their exodus from their country. We are hosting and integrating them into our society. Argentina has already received 130,000 Venezuelans. President, for decades, we have been meeting here to safeguard international peace and security. However, we are living in a world which is not immune to serious threats, such as organized crime, cybercrime, and terrorism. These require cooperative responses if they are to be addressed. In recent years, with political will and greater cooperation between our partners in the region and in the world, we have managed to increase the quantity of drugs seized, to dismantle criminal drug trafficking networks, and to increase the arrests of national and international fugitives. We have also reduced the drugs-related homicides throughout our country. In this regard, we are continuing to seek the necessary consensus to set up a complementary court at a regional level so that we can combat organized crime together. Argentina condemns terrorism in all its forms and manifestations. We suffered directly from terrorism with two very serious attacks in 1992 and 1994. These cost the lives of 107 people, and there were hundreds of injured. Our country will not waver from its goal of bringing all those involved in these attacks to Argentinian courts so that they can be tried and ultimately sentenced. In this regard, and given that next year will be the 25th anniversary of the attack on the AMIA in Argentina, I should like once again to ask the Islamic Republic of Iran to cooperate with the Argentinian judicial authorities so as to advance the investigations into the most brutal terror attack we have suffered on our territory. We call upon countries friendly to Argentina and request that they assist us by avoiding hosting or sheltering with diplomatic immunity any of those accused, for whom international arrest warrants and Interpol red notices have been issued. In this regard, I should like to remember the five Argentinians who were killed on the 31st of October 2017 in this city. My heart is with the families of those victims and of victims of terrorist barbarism across the world. President, Argentina maintains a strategic vision of the South Atlantic, where we seek to peacefully develop an active policy in terms of resources, the environment, and science. This includes the Malvinas question. In this assembly, I should like to reaffirm once again the legitimate and non-time-barred sovereign rights of Argentina over the Malvinas Islands, the South Georgia Islands, and South Sandwich Islands and their surrounding maritime areas. I should also like to reaffirm my government's commitment to this new phase of our relations with the United Kingdom, based upon building mutual trust and a broad, positive dialogue. president. Argentina is a country with a democratic and multilateral identity. Multilateralism is fundamental in order to lay out our national interests and to seek consensus. We maintain our firm commitment to the Paris Agreement and to Agenda 2030 for Sustainable Development, which we have established as pillars of our government's policy in the field of poverty eradication, climate change, and gender equality. Argentina has been demonstrating its willingness to contribute to strengthening global governance. Last year, we hosted the WTO Ministerial Conference, where it was made very clear that there is a future after the meeting in Buenos Aires. In 2019, we will host the high-level conference on South-South cooperation. And we will be preparing in 2020 to preside over the NPT review conference, thus reaffirming our historic commitment to non-proliferation and nuclear disarmament. This year, we are holding the presidency of the G20 with a spirit of unity and constantly seeking consensus. The results being achieved give reason for enthusiasm. In all the working groups and in every ministerial meeting, a spirit of collective compromise is prevailing, as during the meeting of trade ministers, where a will was expressed to revitalize the multilateral trade system. On the 30th of November in Buenos Aires, the first summit of G20 leaders in South America will be held. With the support of our partners, the G20 will be able to demonstrate once again its validity and its relevance. The international community is facing challenges which require effective, efficient commitment. They require solutions which are reached through dialogue and consensus building. The theme of this assembly underscores leadership and shared responsibility in order to achieve peaceful, equitable, and sustainable societies. The Argentinian people are committed to achieving this and doing our part to make these societies a reality. I thank you very much for listening and wish you all the very best. Thank you.
And we're going to close with a presentation made by the new president of Ecuador, another South American country that was formerly led by a leftist government and that has seen a reversal take place in the past 2 years. President Lenin Moreno was elected with the endorsement of the former leftist president Rafael Correa and ran on the same party platform under which Correa had governed. Once taking office, however, he reversed course and has been cozying up to the United States. This is Ecuador's President, Lenin Moreno, at the UN General Assembly in New York, Tuesday.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Madam President, Mr. Secretary General, Excellencies, friends. Everything in life is cause and effect, and every effect implies a cause. Human beings, we have tendency to scour the past, to try to find comparisons, to predict the future, because we are unavoidably part of this chain of causes and effects. Those who govern, leaders, the decision makers, we have an immense responsibility in the way the world perceives its future. Our nations must understand that causality is not fatalism, quite to the contrary. Peoples have the force, the strength to change their surroundings. For this, the international policies that take root here in the most important global forum must help us empower our societies. It must help us to understand history as something that we can change. Policies are successful when they strive to address the individual histories of every single individual, in particular those who are the poorest, those who are left behind, those who need the most, because we are nations, we are united nations, we're united to change the history of peoples. Our plan of government, by the way, is entitled A Whole Life, because that is precisely what we are and what we do. A whole life to living, to get it right, but also to make mistakes, to dream, to build, to love. And for us, those who are here, it is up to us to analyze and to cope with the consequences of this. The plan is called A Whole Life because we want to be attentive to the human being from the moment he or she is conceived until their passing, when God closes our eyes. And depending on the time, a moment of the person's life, this being attentive can mean caring, it can mean encouraging, it can mean motivating, supporting, and expressing gratitude. Caring and encouraging perhaps are part of the first phase of life, to care for the mother, for the child, both before and after birth, and to look after the child during his or her first 1,000 days of life. That is a mission that we call a mission of tenderness. And then, of course, comes the next stage of encouraging children to enjoy, to play, to study, to be happy, to teach them to love science, to delve with passion into the technology. It's true, it's important to study, but it's perhaps even more useful and edifying to be creative, to love research, to let your imagination soar, to challenge yourself with technology, to constantly cultivate values, and never to stop playing and experimenting with colors, with sounds, with aromas, with textures, with tastes and skills. Now, after comes the next phase of motivating, to provide young people with knowledge that will serve them for their future in their professional life, to encourage them to be entrepreneurs based on a strong sense dose of self-satisfaction, make sure that their future is more straightforward, less complicated, that they learn to love life, discover what is beautiful in their surroundings, so that they're never forced to seek satisfaction and security in foreign substances. Now, we should encourage them with financing, with greater participation, to encourage them to trust their capabilities and their dreams. Now, support, that perhaps is more for the adult. We support the adults to find jobs, to shore up their family, to make sure that their projects take flight, to have social security and individual security, and what's important for their family, to have a roof over their head. This is a mission that we have called A Home for Everyone. And then there's the last phase of gratitude, so that our elders can enjoy their latter years in the knowledge that they live in a society that is grateful for everything they have done, that they're surrounded by love, company, and care, so that these years are truly their best years. Someone asked me once, what gave rise to this thinking? And I answered several times, perhaps, I answered. Yes, perhaps. Perhaps I was born and I lived as a child in the Amazon region, in the lungs of the planet. I was born in the heart of the Amazon region, the lungs of the planet, in the most mega diverse tropical forest in the world. There I got to know deep-rooted problems of those who are abandoned, how precarious life and health can be without even minimal coverage for human beings. Many children there died, and many mothers perished with them. Now, in the framework of this General Assembly, we will examine two fundamental topics at the highest level regarding in the area of health. That is combating tuberculosis and the onslaught of non-communicable diseases. It is my desire the commitment of all, and in particular of Ecuador, that these discussions give rise to agreements and commitments to concrete actions. It is scandalous, unjust, and immoral. It's scandalous, unjust, and immoral, I repeat, that access to medication that can save lives often is limited because privilege is granted to intellectual property and profits of major pharmaceutical companies instead of the right to health that every individual has. It is this kind of discussion, that the UN takes on meaning that is based on the daily experiences of the citizens of the world. The more we in the United Nations strive to touch the lives of people, the stronger we will be as we face the future. Now, perhaps also because after many years of playing in the neighborhood where I lived, surrounded by supportive neighbors, I learned the value of community life. We came and went into everyone's house. Our neighbors cared for us. We helped each other in any circumstances. We celebrated individual achievements. In fact, the ideal of peace and a shared life was at the very origin of the United Nations as well. We cannot forget that this should be the venue where we discuss major problems, large problems and small, among countries. And as part of this discussion, we should encourage countries to engage in constant dialogue, standing reciprocity, encourage them to strengthen multilateralism, to listen to each other, to engage in dialogue. But what's important, and I want to underscore, to hear those who find themselves in situations that we want to examine, deal with, and resolve. Another perhaps is, perhaps when I was young, I looked at my situation and compared it with those of some of my friends who had excellent ideas, but they didn't have neither the knowledge nor the ability to carry through on their endeavors. And so we experienced the anguish of not having startup capital for our businesses, and we spent long nights before paying monthly bills, trying to invent where to get the money to meet our obligations to our employees. We learned from personal experience not to allow others to underestimate us for being young people. We learned the decisive role of private initiative. We understood that entrepreneurship is a value that generates wealth, jobs, well-being, self-esteem, and freedom. Today, the private sector on the global scale is more aware of its role. That role goes far beyond simply profits, production, and jobs. Today, large, medium, and small businesses are interconnected in thousands of ways. And as they understand their role in providing well-being in their daily actions, they can be essential actors for global efforts to promote peace and prosperity. Bearing this in mind, we must live up together to the commitments that we have undertaken as part of the agenda for sustainable development. And the notion of partnership is an essential part of that agenda. Perhaps, another perhaps, because 20 years ago I was assaulted and I lost the movement of my legs. As you can see, I get around in a wheelchair. Is this bad? I don't know. A Chinese saying says that everything is neither that bad nor that good. It's bad because when I came home after the hospital, this was very hard. There were no IV drips or painkillers, only a constant pain. And I remembered Francis of Assisi, who spoke of pain my brother, because I experienced this kind of pain and even stronger pain. And now, perhaps because I see from this wheelchair, I see through the eyes of the heart. When you have legs, you look ahead of you and above you. However, when you're seated in a wheelchair, you see horizontally and you see below you. And you discover other realities, other worlds. We see You see, those who are only encounter barriers to move forward, to continue, including even to be able to live. Barriers of different types: mistreatment, xenophobia, racism, injustice, machismo, inequality. In other words, to sum it up, exclusion. This story is not only my story, it's the story of billions of people around the world. Madam President of the General Assembly, this is one of the most important topics that will be examined, is precisely the implementation of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. The implementation of these rights of the convention and its optional protocol is precisely what will help us ensure that together we will live up to a commitment that remains pending. And bearing this in mind, it is a great honor for Ecuador to exercise in the next 2 years the presidency of the Conference of States Parties of the Convention. Now, from this forum, we will ensure that promotion and protection of individuals with disability, that we step up our efforts to do that, to make sure that we increase accessibility so that we become a truly inclusive United Nations. And we're not talking about only physical accessibility, but also so that individuals with disability and their rights are taken into account in all discussions, resolutions, and initiatives of the United Nations. And perhaps as well, because now, just as in the past when I travel in my country and around the world, I see exclusion and injustice. We exclude those who are different, who are poor, who are older, who are young. We mistreat women, girls, indigenous women. There are so many brothers and sisters who are abandoned and forgotten. And there are so many people who walk right by without even noticing them. As member states of the United Nations, we cannot allow that because of laziness or inertia, because of that misery and injustice, remain a part of our everyday landscape. That is precisely what sustainable development goals are aimed at. These goals are an essential part of our program of government. The program that I just want to repeat is called A Whole Life. Perhaps also because it's clear for me that during our whole life we must be happy, and it's precisely for that goal that we govern. We are in a great country here. Its Declaration of Independence of the United States, its famous second line, written by the great Thomas Jefferson, with contributions by Adams and Benjamin Franklin, and I quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." End of quote. The pursuit of happiness. This declaration inspired, amongst others, the Constitution of this great country, which is a global reference in scientific research and development. For this, and perhaps because we always very attentively follow events around the world, we don't understand how a country such as this can blockade an almost defenseless nation such as Cuba. It is almost impossible for us to understand that that you prevent others from having the right to their rights, to life, to freedom, and to the pursuit of happiness, that you prevent them. And also, perhaps because we were idealistic young people, because we continue to be rebellious, we don't understand how major powers spend on weapons instead of investing in the development of nations. We also don't understand how these countries that have achieved such a level of development and superiority in weapons prefer to see their sons fight in wars, intervene in foreign conflicts, instead of resolving them, they aggravate them and perpetuate them. Perhaps also because when bankers and those who were unscrupulous robbed the pockets of the people of Ecuador, when they made entire families poor, when governments, instead of caring for the poor and the needy, they do everything that's quite the opposite. In Ecuador, we are receiving daily at least 6,000 of our brethren from Venezuela. Children come from with diphtheria, with polio. Women who are pregnant have never had any kind of medical control. We have provided 50,000 vaccines for these children, and we have provided medical care for some 1 million people who've left their homes to find a better future. This is the largest diaspora in the history of our continent. We have urged the government and the people of Venezuela to resolve their crisis the way it should be, on the basis of a national dialogue that is frank and inclusive. We also encouraged just recently the neighboring countries of the region to take on practically and in a comprehensive, holistic way to express support for migrants and displaced people and refugees from Venezuela. We cannot allow, we cannot simply make diplomatic statements. We want a continent-wide efforts to find a solution, including a structural solution to the problems of the brethren people of Venezuela. I want to underscore that no one emigrates because they want to. They are forced to do it because they are uprooted, and because often it leads to dismembering of the family, which is very harsh and painful. Jose Marti, the Cuban poet, said, when the people emigrates, there are too many. Those who govern them, are useless. So we express solidarity for those who come to us, and we invite all those who are migrants, who left our country, to come back to their homes, to reincorporate to our in our family, national family. In July, we approved the Global Pact of Migration that will be adopted in December in Morocco. We cannot allow this pact to remain a dead letter. We have to become aware that inclusion has no borders, that the right of every individual to life and happiness does not end where mine begins. Both rights are fundamental rights of the human being. They're interdependent, and they enrich each other in their interconnectedness. Now, regarding the crisis in Venezuela or the crisis of Nicaragua, our Latin America has a huge challenge of consolidating democracy, given that various countries have authoritarian, corrupt, and populist governments. The history of the United Nations is the history of a common pact to preserve the human rights of citizens of the whole world. Rights can only be guaranteed in the framework of solid institutions with broad freedom of expression, with a transition of power. These are fundamental elements of strong democracies, and our nation should be committed to building these democracies, to caring for them. And my government has maintained its democratic commitment in each one of its actions and decisions. It has maintained its commitment with the original ideals of our United Nations. Kofi Annan, this great man who left us so many lessons, such important lessons, said, in the face of the growing cynicism about democracy, we cannot give up. Rather, we need to defend and advocate for the values and virtues of democracy. End of quote. Madam President, dear friend, Maria Fernandez Pinoza, you are the first Latin American woman to preside this assembly. Ecuador would like to thank for this the support of Brethren Nations for your election. We are aware of the immense responsibility that you have at the head of this global forum. We all We all are in favor of seeing the UN be relevant for our nations. We are the organization that brings together our nations in their concerns and in their aspirations. We see the international effort that the UN is making to care for our children, for our neighbors, for ourselves. For this, we support its disarmament plan. We support the Global Migration Pact. We're promoting the Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And in addition to an innumerable list of actions, commitments, and decisions, the United Nations is our organization. If there are flaws in it, we should correct them. Let's not try to take it apart and dismember it. Let's not take away funding from it, because we need to strengthen it for the future. So we want to leave a strong UN for our futures. If we're going to create additional complementary organizations, that we can do to, for example, support trading systems or specific projects, regional projects in the area of culture, education, or sports. All these are welcome, but the ultimate goal should be to strengthen the global union, to implement the Sustainable Development Goals, and all the historic commitments that we have undersigned. However, we don't believe, nor should we use regional organizations to defend outdated, perverse, and dictatorial systems, as we've seen born and unfortunately die in the last few decades. Colleagues and brothers and sisters from around the world, this institution is the most important living symbol of the global commitment to peace. For years, we've spoken a lot about peace. We've spoken at length about peace. But no one has been able to do better than the definition of Gandhi regarding its condition as the sole path for humankind. Peace is our greatest right. It's a sine qua non condition for life and happiness. Ecuador has serious problems on our northern border, in particular with international crime and drug trafficking, and we are dealing with this with the president of Colombia. We have committed ourselves to putting an end to this, and as each cause will have its effect, and each effect will continue transforming itself in another cause. We know that world peace is a duty that remains pending because it hasn't yet taken full root in the heart of every human being. As a father and a grandfather, I know that, and there won't be any peace unless we inculcate values throughout life. We know that, for example, civility is not simply an issue of public interest or honesty or transparency. It's not a topic taught in schools but in particular it has to be inculcated in the heart, and unless we do that, we will never create the groundwork for peaceful coexistence. As someone who comes from the Amazon region, I know that there won't be any peace unless we preserve our planet. We must make the Amazon not only the lungs, but the heart of our planet. As an individual with disabilities, there won't be peace unless we have inclusion and we celebrate diversity. As a president, I know that peace is ultimately the option of preferring the poor, working for those who need it most, making sure that everyone, without exception, are free to realize their dreams every day, every single day, for throughout their whole lives. Thank you very much.